tell me.
There's nothing I want you to do, nothing you can do, or anyone. It's my burden to bear.
You don't have to.
I do. What I have to face, what I endure, Farah, you would not survive.
So I'm to live here forever, in ignorance of the true scope of what's happening? If you don't want me to understand what's going on, would you rather...
I swallowed hard.
Rather I found someplace else to live, where I'm not a distraction?
Didn't Cullen Mai teach you anything?
Only that magic makes you into a brute. He laughed, though not entirely with amusement. When I remained silent, he sighed.
No, I don't want you to live somewhere else. I want you here where I can look after you. Where I can come home and know you're here, painting and safe.
I couldn't look away from him.
I thought about sending you away at first, he murmured. Part of me still thinks I should have found somewhere else for you to live. But maybe I was selfish. Even when you made it so clear that you were more interested in ignoring the treaty or finding a way out of it, I couldn't bring myself to let you go. To find someplace in Prithian where you'd be comfortable enough to not attempt to flee.
Why? He picked up the small painting of the frozen forest and examined it again.
I've had many lovers, he admitted. Females of noble birth, warriors, princesses.
Rage hit me, low and deep in the gut at the thought of them. Rage at their titles, their undoubtedly good looks, at their closeness to him.
But they never understood what it was like, what it is like for me to care for my people, my lands. What scars are still there, what the bad days feel like.
That wrathful jealousy faded away like morning dew as he smiled at my painting.
This reminds me of it.
Of what? I breathed. He lowered the painting, looking right at me, right into me.
That I'm not alone.
I didn't lock my bedroom door that night. Chapter 23. The next afternoon, I lay on my back in the grass, savoring the warmth of the sunshine filtering through the canopy of leaves, noting how I might incorporate it into my next painting. Lucian, claiming that he had miserable emissary business to attend to, had left Tamlin and me to our own devices, and the High Lord had taken me to yet another beautiful spot in his enchanted forest. But there were no enchantments here, no pools of starlight, no rainbow waterfalls. It was just a grassy glen watched over by a weeping willow, with a clear brook running through it. We lounged in comfortable silence, and I glanced at Tamlin, who dozed beside me. His golden hair and mask glistened bright against the emerald carpet. The delicate arch of his pointed ears made me pause. He opened an eye and smiled lazily at me.
That willow's singing always puts me to sleep.
The what of what? I said, propping myself on my elbows to stare at the tree above us. Tamlin pointed toward the willow. The branches sighed as they moved in the breeze.
It sings.
I suppose it sings war camp limericks, too? He smiled and half sat up, twisting to look at me.
You're human, he said, and I rolled my eyes. Your senses are still sealed off from everything.
I made a face. Just another of my many shortcomings. But the word, shortcomings, had somehow stopped finding its mark. He plucked a strand of grass from my hair. Heat radiated from my face as his fingers grazed my cheek.
I could make you able to see it, he said.
His fingers lingered at the end of my braid, twirling the curl of hair around.
See my world, hear it, smell it.
My breathing became shallow as he sat up.
Taste it.
His eyes flicked to the fading bruise on my neck. How? I asked, heat blooming as he crouched before me.
Every gift comes with a price.
I frowned, and he grinned.
A kiss.
Absolutely not. But my blood raced, and I had to clench my hands in the grass to keep from touching him. Don't you think it puts me at a disadvantage to not be able to see all this?
I'm one of the High Fae. We don't give anything without gaining something from it.
To my own surprise, I said, fine. He blinked, probably expecting me to have fought a little harder. I hid my smile and sat up so that I faced him, our knees touching as we knelt in the grass. I licked my lips, my heart fluttering so quickly it felt as if I had a hummingbird inside my chest.
Close your eyes, he said, and I obeyed, my fingers grappling onto the grass.
The birds chattered and the willow branches sighed. The grass crunched as Tamlin rose up on his knees. I braced myself at the brush of his mouth on one of my eyelids, then on the other. He pulled away and I was left breathless, the kisses still lingering on my skin. The singing of birds became an orchestra, a symphony of gossip and mirth. I'd never heard so many layers of music, never heard the variations and themes that wove between their arpeggios, and beyond the bird song, there was an ethereal melody, a woman, melancholy and weary. The willow. Gasping, I opened my eyes. The world had become richer, clearer. The brook was a near invisible rainbow of water that flowed over stones as invitingly smooth as silk. The trees were clothed in a faint shimmer that radiated from their centers and danced along the edges of their leaves. There was no tangy metallic stench. No, the smell of magic had become like jasmine, like lilac, like roses. I would never be able to paint it, the richness, the feel, maybe fractions of it, but not the whole thing. Magic. Everything was magic, and it broke my heart. I looked to Tamlin, and my heart cracked entirely. It was Tamlin, but not. Rather, it was the Tamlin I'd dreamed of. His skin gleamed with a golden sheen, and around his head glowed a circlet of sunshine. And his eyes? Not merely green and gold, but every hue and variation that could be imagined, as though every leaf in the forest had bled into one shade. This was a High Lord of Prithian. Devastatingly handsome, captivating, powerful beyond belief. My breath caught in my throat as I touched the contours of his mask. The cool metal bit into my fingertips, and the emerald slipped against my calloused skin. I lifted my other hand and gently grasped either side of the mask. I pulled lightly. It wouldn't move. He began smiling as I pulled again, and I blinked, dropping my hands. Instantly, the golden, glowing Tamlin vanished, and the one I knew returned. I could still hear the singing of the willow and the birds, but...
Why can't I see you anymore?
Because I willed my glamour back into place.
Glamour for what?
To look normal. Or as normal as I can look with this damned thing, he added, gesturing to the mask. Being a High Lord... Even one with limited powers comes with physical markers, too. It's why I couldn't hide what I was becoming from my brothers, from anyone. It's still easier to blend in.
But the mask truly can't come off?
I mean, are you sure there's no one who knows how to fix what the magic did that night? Even someone in another court? I don't know why the mask bothered me so greatly. I didn't need to see his entire face to know him.
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
I just want to know what you look like. I wondered when I'd grown so shallow.
What do you think I look like?
I tilted my head to the side. A strong, straight nose, I said, drawing from what I'd once tried to paint. High cheekbones that bring out your eyes. Slightly arched brows, I finished, blushing. He was grinning so broadly that I could almost see all of his teeth, those fangs nowhere in sight. I tried to think up an excuse for my forwardness, but a yawn crept from me as a sudden weight pressed on my eyes.
What about your part of the bargain?
What? He leaned closer, his smile turning wicked.
What about my kiss?
I grabbed his fingers. Here, I said, and slammed my mouth against the back of his hand. There's your kiss. Tamlin roared with laughter, but the world blurred, lulling me to sleep. The willow beckoned me to lie down, and I obliged. From far off, I heard Tamlin curse.
Vera.
Sleep. I wanted sleep. And there was no better place to sleep than right here, listening to the willow and the birds and the brook. I curled on my side, using my arm for a pillow.
I should bring you home, he murmured, but he didn't move to drag me to my feet.
Instead, I felt a slight thud in the earth, and the spring rain and new grass scent of him cloyed in my nose as he lay beside me. I tingled with pleasure as he stroked my hair. This was such a lovely dream. I'd never slept so wonderfully before. So warm, nestled beside him. Calm. Faintly, echoing into my world of slumber, he spoke again, his breath caressing my ear.
You're exactly as I dreamed you'd be, too.
Darkness swallowed everything. Chapter 24. It wasn't the dawn that awoke me, but rather a buzzing noise. I groaned as I sat up in bed and squinted at the squat woman with skin made from tree bark who fussed with my breakfast dishes. Where's Alice? I asked, rubbing the sleep from my eyes. Tamlin must have carried me up here. Must have carried me the whole way home. What? She turned toward me. Her bird mask was familiar, but I would have remembered a fairy with skin like that. Would have painted it already. Is Alice unwell? I said, sliding from the bed. This was my room, wasn't it? A quick glance told me yes. Are you out of your right mind? The fairy said. I bit my lip. I am Alice, she clucked, and with a shake of her head, she strode into the bathing room to start my bath. It was impossible. The Alice I knew was fair and plump and looked like a high fae. I rubbed my eyes with my thumb and forefinger. A glamour. That's what Tamlin had said he wore. His fairy sight had stripped away the glamours I'd been seeing, but why bother to glamour everything? Because I'd been a cowering human, that's why. Because Tamlin knew I would have locked myself in this room and never come out if I'd seen them all for their true selves. Things only got worse when I made my way downstairs to find the High Lord. The hallways were bustling with masked fairies I'd never seen before. Some were tall and humanoid, high fae like Tamlin. Others were not fairies. I tried to avoid looking at those ones, as they seemed the most surprised to notice my attention.
I was almost shaking by the time I reached the dining room. Lucian mercifully appeared like Lucian. I didn't ask whether that was because Tamlin had informed him to put up a better glamour or because he didn't bother trying to be something he wasn't. Tamlin lounged in his usual chair, but straightened as I lingered in the doorway.
What's wrong?
There are a lot of people, fairies, around. When did they arrive?
I'd almost yelped when I looked out my bedroom window and spotted all the fairies in the garden. Many of them, all with insect masks, pruned the hedges and tended the flowers. Those fairies had been the strangest of all, with their iridescent buzzing wings sprouting from their backs. And, of course, then there was the green and brown skin, and their unnaturally long limbs, and...
Tamlin bit his lip as if to keep from smiling.
They've been here all along.
But I didn't hear anything.
Of course you didn't, Lucian drawled, and twirled one of his daggers between his hands.
We made sure you couldn't see or hear anyone but those who were necessary.
I adjusted the lapels of my tunic. So you mean that when I ran after the puka that night...
You had an audience, Lucian finished for me.
I thought I'd been so stealthy. Meanwhile, I'd been tiptoeing past fairies who had probably laughed their heads off at the blind human following an illusion. Fighting against my rising mortification, I turned to Tamlin. His lips twitched and he clamped them tightly together, but the amusement still danced in his eyes as he nodded.
It was a valiant effort.
But I could see the Naga, and the Puka and the Suriel, and that fairy whose wings were ripped off, I said, wincing inwardly. Why didn't the glamour apply to them?
His eyes darkened. They're not members of my court, Tamlin said, so my glamour didn't keep a hold on them. The puka belongs to the wind and weather and everything that changes. And the Naga, they belong to someone else.
I see, I lied, not quite seeing at all. Lucian chuckled, sensing it, and I glared sidelong at him. You've been noticeably absent again. He used the dagger to clean his nails.
I've been busy. So have you, I take it.
What's that supposed to mean? I demanded.
If I offer you the moon on a string, will you give me a kiss too?
Don't be an ass, Tamlin said to him with a soft snarl, but Lucian continued laughing and was still laughing when he left the room. Alone with Tamlin, I shifted on my feet.
So if I were to encounter the Atar again, I said, mostly to avoid the heavy silence, would I actually see it?
Yes, and it wouldn't be pleasant.
You said it didn't see me that time, and it certainly doesn't seem like a member of your court, I ventured. Why?
Because I threw a glamour over you when we entered the garden, he said simply. The Atar couldn't see, hear, or smell you.
His gaze went to the window beyond me, and he ran a hand through his hair.
I've done all I can to keep you invisible to creatures like the Atar, and worse. The blight is acting up again, and more of these creatures are being freed from their tethers.
My stomach turned over.
If you spot one, Tamlin continued. Even if it looks harmless but makes you feel uncomfortable, pretend you don't see it. Don't talk to it. If it hurts you, the results wouldn't be pleasant for it or for me. You remember what happened with the Naga.
This was for my own safety, not his amusement. He didn't want me hurt. He didn't want to punish them for hurting me. Even if the Naga hadn't been part of his court, had it hurt him to kill them? Realizing he waited for my answer,
I nodded.
The blight is growing again?
So far, only in the other territories. You're safe here.
It's not my safety I'm worried about. Tamlin's eyes softened, but his lips became a thin line as he said,
It'll be fine.
Is it possible that the surge will be temporary?
A fool's hope.
Tamlin didn't reply, which was answer enough. If the blight was becoming active again, I didn't bother to offer my aid. I already knew he wouldn't allow me to help with whatever this conflict was. But I thought of that painting I'd given him, about what he'd said about it, and wished he would let me in anyway. The next morning, I found a head in the garden. A bleeding male high fey head, spiked atop a fountain statue of a great heron flapping its wings. The stone was soaked in enough blood to suggest that the head had been fresh when someone had impaled it on the heron's upraised bill. I had been hauling my paints and easel out to the garden to paint one of the beds of irises when I stumbled across it. My tins and brushes had clattered to the gravel. I didn't know where I was as I stared at that still-screaming head, the brown eyes bulging, the teeth broken and bloody. No mask, so he wasn't a part of the spring court. Anything else about him, I couldn't discern. His blood was so bright on the gray stone, his mouth open so vulgarly. I backed away a step and slammed into something warm and hard. I whirled, hands rising out of instinct, but Tamlin's voice said,
It's me,
and I stopped cold. Lucian stood beside him, pale and grim.
Not Autumn Court, Lucian said. I don't recognize him at all.
Tamlin's hands clamped on my shoulders as I turned back toward the head.
Neither do I.
A soft, vicious growl laced his words, but no claws pricked my skin as he kept gripping me. His hands tightened, though, while Lucian stepped into the small pool in which the statue stood, striding through the red water until he peered up at the anguished face.
They branded him behind the ear with a sigil, Lucian said, swearing. A mountain with three stars. Night Court, Tamlin said too quietly.
The Night Court, the northernmost bit of Prithian, if I recalled the mural's map correctly. A land of darkness and starlight.
Why would they do this?
I breathed. Tamlin let go, coming to stand at my side as Lucian climbed the statue to remove the head. I looked toward a blossoming crabapple tree instead.
The Night Court does what it wants, Tamlin said. They live by their own codes, their own corrupt morals. They're all sadistic killers, Lucian said.
I dared a glance at him. He was now perched on the heron's stone wing. I looked away again.
They delight in torture of every kind, and would find this sort of stunt to be amusing.
Amusing, but not a message? I scanned the garden.
Oh, it's a message, Lucian said,
and I cringed at the thick, wet sounds of flesh and bone on stone as he yanked the head off. I'd skinned enough animals, but this... Tamlin put another hand on my shoulder.
To get in and out of our defenses, to possibly commit the crime nearby with the blood this fresh.
A splash as Lucian landed in the water again.
It's exactly what the High Lord of the Night Court would find amusing, the bastard.
I gauged the distance between the pool and the house. 60, maybe 70 feet. That's how close they'd come to us. Tamlin brushed a thumb against my shoulder.
You're still safe here. This was just their idea of a prank.
This isn't connected to the blight? I asked.
Only in that they know the blight is again awakening, and want us to know they're circling the Spring Court like vultures should our wards fall further.
I must have looked as sick as I felt, because Tamlin added,
I won't let that happen.
I didn't have the heart to say that their masks made it fairly clear that nothing could be done against the blight. Lucian splashed out of the fountain, but I couldn't look at him, not with the head he bore, the blood surely on his hands and clothes.
They'll get what's coming to them soon enough. Hopefully the blight will wreck them too.
Tamlin growled at Lucian to take care of the head, and the gravel crunched as Lucian departed. I crouched to pick up my paints and brushes, my hands shaking as I fumbled for a large brush. Tamlin knelt next to me, but his hands closed around mine, squeezing.
You're still safe, he said again.
The Suriel's command echoed through my mind. Stay with the High Lord, human. You will be safe. I nodded.
It's court posturing, he said. The Night Court is deadly, but this was only their lord's idea of a joke. Attacking anyone here, attacking you, would cause more trouble than it's worth for him. If the blight truly does harm these lands, and the Night Court enters our borders, we'll be ready.
My knees shook as I rose. Fairy politics, fairy courts. Their idea of jokes must have been even more horrible when we were enslaved to you all. They must have tortured us whenever they liked. Must have done such unspeakable, awful things to their human pets. A shadow flickered in his eyes.
Some days, I'm very glad I was still a child when my father sent his slaves south of the wall. What I witnessed then was bad enough.
I didn't want to imagine. Even now, I still hadn't looked to see if any hints of those long-ago humans had been left behind. I did not think 5 centuries would be enough to cleanse the stains of the horrors that my people had endured. I should have let it go. Should have, but couldn't. Do you remember if they were happy to leave? Tamlin shrugged.
Yes. Yet they had never known freedom or known the seasons as you do. They didn't know what to do in the mortal world. But yes, most of them were very, very happy to leave.
Each word was more ground out than the next.
I was happy to see them go, even if my father wasn't.
Despite the stillness with which he stood, his claws poked out from above his knuckles. No wonder he'd been so awkward with me, had no idea what to do with me when I'd first arrived. But I said quietly, You're not your father, Tamlin, or your brothers. He glanced away, and I added, You never made me feel like a prisoner, never made me feel like little more than chattel. The shadows that flickered in his eyes as he nodded his thanks told me there was more, still more that he had yet to tell me about his family, his life before they'd been killed, and this title had been thrust upon him. I wouldn't ask, not with the blight pressing down on him, not until he was ready. He'd given me space and respect. I could offer him no less. Still, I couldn't bring myself to paint that day. Chapter 25. Tamlin was called away to one of the borders hours after I found that head. Where and why, he wouldn't tell me. But I sensed enough from what he didn't say. The blight was indeed crawling from other courts, directly toward ours. He stayed the night, the first he'd ever spent away, but sent Lucian to inform me that he was alive. Lucian had emphasized that last word enough that I slept terribly, even as a small part of me marveled that Tamlin had bothered to let me know about his well-being. I knew,
I knew I was headed down a path that would likely end in my mortal heart being left in pieces. And yet I couldn't stop myself. I hadn't been able to since that day with the Naga. But seeing that head, the games these courts played, with people's lives as tokens on a board, it was an effort to keep food down whenever I thought about it. Yet despite the creeping malice, I awoke the next day to the sound of merry fiddling, and when I looked out the window, I found the garden bedecked in ribbons and streamers. On the distant hills, I spied the makings of fires and maypoles being raised. When I asked Alice, whose people I'd learned were called the Urisk, she simply said, "Summer solstice. The main celebration used to be at the summer court, but things are different. So now we have one here too. You're going." Summer. In the weeks that I'd been painting and dining with Tamlin and wandering the courtlands at his side, summer had come. Did my family still truly believe me to be visiting some long-lost aunt? What were they doing with themselves? If it was the solstice, then there would be a small gathering in the village center. Nothing religious, of course, though the children of the blessed might wander in to try to convert the young people. Just some shared food, donated ale from the solitary tavern, and maybe some line dances. The only thing to celebrate was a day's break from the long summer days of planting and tilling. From the decorations around the estate, I could tell this would be something far grander, far more spirited. Tamlin remained gone for most of the day. Worry gnawed at me even as I painted a quick, loose rendering of the streamers and ribbons in the garden. Perhaps it was petty and selfish, given the returning blight, but I also quietly hoped that the solstice didn't require the same rites as Fire Night. I didn't let myself think too much about what I would do if Tamlin had a flock of beautiful fairies lining up for him. It wasn't until late afternoon that I heard Tamlin's deep voice and Lucian's braying laugh echo through the halls all the way up to my painting room. Relief sent my chest caving in, but as I rushed to find them, Alice yanked me upstairs. She stripped off my paint-splattered clothes and insisted I change into a flowing cornflower blue chiffon gown. She left my hair unbound, but wove a garland of pink, white, and blue wildflowers around the crown of my head. I might have felt childish with it on, but in the months I'd been there, my sharp bones and skeletal form had filled out. A woman's body. I ran my hands over the sweeping, soft curves of my waist and hips. I had never thought I would feel anything but muscle and bone. "Cauldron, boil me," Lucian whistled as I came down the stairs. "She looks positively fey." I was too busy looking Tamlin over, scanning for any injury, any sign of blood or mark that the blight might have left, to thank Lucian for the compliment. But Tamlin was clean, almost glowing, completely unharmed, and smiling at me. Whatever he'd gone to deal with had left him unscathed. "You look lovely," Tamlin murmured, and something in his soft tone made me want to purr. I squared my shoulders, disinclined to let him see how much his words or voice or sheer well-being impacted me. Not yet. "I'm surprised I'm even allowed to participate tonight."
"Unfortunately for you and your neck," Lucian countered, "tonight's just a party."
"Do you lie awake at night to come up with all your witty replies for the following day?" Lucian winked at me, and Tamlin laughed and offered me his arm.
"He's right," the High Lord said.
I was aware of every inch where we touched, of the hard muscles beneath his green tunic. He led me into the garden, and Lucian followed.
"Solstice celebrates when day and night are equal. It's a time of neutrality, when everyone can take down their hair and simply enjoy being a fairy. Not high fae or fairy, just us, and nothing else.
So there's singing and dancing and excessive drinking, Lucian chimed in, falling into step beside me. And dallying, he added with a wicked grin. Indeed, every brush of Tamlin's body against mine made it harder to avoid the urge to lean into him entirely, to smell him and touch him and taste him. Whether he noticed the heat singeing my neck and face or heard my uneven heartbeat, he revealed nothing, holding my arm tighter as we walked out of the garden and into the fields beyond. The sun was beginning its final descent when we reached the plateau on which the festivities were to be held. I tried not to gawk at the fairies gathered, even as I was in turn gawked at by them. I'd never seen so many in one place before, at least not without the glamour hiding them from me. Now that my eyes were open to the sight, the exquisite dresses and lithe forms that were shaped and colored and built so strangely and differently were a marvel to behold. Yet what little novelty my own presence by the High Lord's side offered soon wore off, helped by a low, warning growl from Tamlin that sent the others scattering to mind their own business. Table after table of food had been lined up along the far edge of the plateau, and I lost Tamlin while I waited in line to fill a plate, leaving me to try my best not to look like I was some human plaything of his. Music started near the giant smoking bonfire, fiddles and drums and merry instruments that had me tapping my feet in the grass. Light and joyous and open, the mirthful sister to the bloodthirsty fire night. Lucian, of course, excelled at disappearing when I needed him, and so I ate my fill of strawberry shortcake, apple tart, and blueberry pie. No different from summer treats in the mortal realm, alone beneath a sycamore covered with silken lanterns and sparkling ribbons. I didn't mind the solitude, not when I was busy contemplating the way the lanterns and ribbons shone, the shadows they cast. Perhaps it would be my next painting. Or maybe I would paint the ethereal fairies beginning to dance. Such angles and colors to them. I wondered if any of them had been the subjects of the painters whose work was displayed in the gallery. I moved, only to get myself something to drink. The plateau became more crowded as the sun sank toward the horizon. Across the hills, other bonfires and parties began, their music filtering through the occasional pause in ours. I was pouring myself a goblet of golden sparkling wine when Lucian finally appeared behind me, peering over my shoulder.
I wouldn't drink that if I were you.
Oh, I said, frowning at the fizzing liquid.
Fairy wine at the solstice, Lucian hinted.
I said, taking a sniff. It didn't reek of alcohol. In fact, it smelled like summers spent lying in the grass and bathing in cool pools. I'd never smelled anything so fantastic.
I'm serious,
Lucian said as I lifted the glass to my lips, my brows raised.
Remember the last time you ignored my warning?
He poked me in the neck and I batted his hand away. I also remember you telling me how witch berries were harmless, and the next thing I knew I was half delirious and falling all over myself, I said, recalling the afternoon from a few weeks ago. I'd had hallucinations for hours afterward, and Lucian had laughed himself sick, enough so that Tamlin had chucked him into the reflection pool. I shook away the thought. Today, just for today, I would indeed let my hair down. Today, let caution be damned. Forget the blight hovering at the edges of the court, threatening my High Lord and his lands. Where was Tamlin, anyway? If there had been some threat, surely Lucian would have known. Surely they would have called off the celebration.
Well, I mean it this time, Lucian said, and I shifted my goblet out of his reach. Tam would gut me if he caught you drinking that.
Always looking after your best interests, I said, and pointedly chugged the contents of the glass.
It was like a million fireworks exploding inside me, filling my veins with starlight. I laughed aloud, and Lucian groaned.
Human fool, he hissed.
But his glamour had been ripped away. His auburn hair burned like hot metal, and his russet eye smoldered like a bottomless forge. That was what I would capture next.
I'm going to paint you, I said,
and giggled. Actually giggled as the words popped out.
Cauldron, boil and fry me, he muttered,
and I laughed again. Before he could stop me, I downed another glass of fairy wine. It was the most glorious thing I'd ever tasted. It liberated me from bonds I hadn't known existed.
The music became a siren song. The melody was my lodestone, and I was powerless against its lure. With each step, I savored the dampness of the grass beneath my bare feet. I didn't remember when I'd lost my shoes. The sky was an eddy of molten amethyst, sapphire, and ruby, all bleeding into a final pool of onyx.
I wanted to swim in it, wanted to bathe in its colors and feel the stars twinkling between my fingers. I stumbled, blinking, and found myself standing at the edge of the ring of dancing. A cluster of musicians played their fairy instruments, and I swayed on my feet as I watched the fairies dancing, circling the bonfire. Not formal dancing. It was like they were as loose as I was, free. I loved them for it.
Damn it, Feyre, Lucian said, gripping my elbow. Do you want me to kill myself trying to keep you from impaling your mortal hide on another rock?
What? I said, turning to him. The whole world spun with me, delightful and entrancing.
Idiot, he said when he looked at my face. Drunken idiot.
The tempo increased. I wanted to be in the music, wanted to ride its speed and weave between its notes. I could feel the music around me, like a living, breathing thing of wonder and joy and beauty.
Feyre, stop, Lucian said, and grabbed me again.
I'd been dancing away, and my body was still swaying toward the pull of the sound.
You stop. Stop being so serious, I said, shaking him off.
I wanted to hear the music, wanted to hear it hot off the instruments. Lucian swore as I burst into movement. I skipped between the dancers, twirling my skirts. The seated, masked musicians didn't look up at me as I leaped before them, dancing in place. No chains, no boundaries, just me and the music, dancing and dancing. I wasn't a fairy, but I was a part of this earth, and the earth was a part of me, and I would be content to dance upon it for the rest of my life. One of the musicians looked up from his fiddling, and I halted. Sweat gleamed on the strong column of his neck as he rested his chin upon the dark wood of the fiddle. He'd rolled up the sleeves of his shirt, revealing the cords of muscle along his forearms. He had once mentioned that he would have liked to be a traveling minstrel if not a warrior or a high lord. Now, hearing him play, I knew he could have made a fortune from it.
I'm sorry, Tam, Lucian panted, appearing from nowhere. I left her alone for a little at one of the food tables, and when I caught up to her, she was drinking the wine and...
Tamlin didn't pause in his playing. His golden hair damp with sweat, he looked marvelously handsome, even though I couldn't see most of his face. He gave me a feral smile as I began to dance in place before him.
I'll look after her,
Tamlin murmured above the music, and I glowed, my dancing becoming faster.
Go enjoy yourself.
Lucian fled. I shouted over the music. I don't need a keeper. I wanted to spin and spin and spin.
No, you don't,
Tamlin said, never once stumbling over his playing. How his bow did dance upon the strings, his fingers sturdy and strong,
No signs of those claws that I had come to stop fearing.
Dance, Feyre, he whispered.
So I did. I was loosened, a top whirling around and around, and I didn't know who I danced with or what they looked like, only that I had become the music and the fire and the night, and there was nothing that could slow me down. Through it all, Tamlin and his musicians played such joyous music that I didn't think the world could contain it all. I sashayed over to him, my fairy lord, my protector and warrior, my friend, and danced before him. He grinned at me, and I didn't break my dancing as he rose from his seat and knelt before me in the grass, offering up a solo on his fiddle to me. Music just for me, a gift. He played on, his fingers fast and hard upon the strings of his fiddle. My body slithered like a snake. I tipped my head back to the heavens and let Tamlin's music fill all of me. There was a pressure at my waist, and I was swept away in someone's arms as they whisked me back into the ring of dancing. I laughed so hard I thought I'd combust, and when I opened my eyes, I found Tamlin there, spinning me round and round. Everything became a blur of color and sound, and he was the only object in it, tethering me to sanity, to my body, which glowed and burned in every place he touched. I was filled with sunshine. It was like I'd never experienced summer before, like I'd never known who was waiting to emerge from that forest of ice and snow. I didn't want it to end. I never wanted to leave this hilltop. The music came to a close, and gasping for breath, I glanced at the moon. It was near setting. Sweat slid down every part of my body. Tamlin, panting as well, took my hand.
Time goes faster when you're drunk on fairy wine.
I'm not drunk, I said, snorting. He only chuckled and led me from the dancing. I dug my heels into the ground as we neared the edge of the firelight. They're starting again, I said, pointing to the dancers gathering before the refreshed musicians. He leaned close, his breath caressing the shell of my ear as he whispered,
I want to show you something better.
I stopped objecting. He led me off the hill, navigating his way by moonlight. Whatever path he chose, he did so out of consideration for my bare feet, for only soft grass cushioned my steps. Soon, even the music faded away, replaced by the sighing of trees in the night breeze.
Here, Tamlin said,
pausing at the edge of a vast meadow. His hand lingered on my shoulder as we looked out. The high grasses moved like water as the last of the moonlight danced upon them. What is it? I breathed, but he put a finger to his lips and beckoned me to look. For a few minutes, there was nothing. Then, from the opposite side of the meadow, dozens of shimmering shapes floated out across the grass, little more than mirages of moonlight. That was when the singing began. It was a collective voice, but in it existed both male and female, two sides of the same coin, singing to each other in a call and response. I raised a hand to my throat as their music rose and they danced. Ghostly and ethereal, they waltzed across the field, no more than slender slants of moonlight. What are they?
Will-o'-the-wisps, spirits of air and light, he said softly. Come to celebrate the solstice.
They're beautiful. His lips grazed my neck as he murmured against my skin.
Dance with me, Feyre.
Really? I turned and found my face mere inches from his. He cracked a lazy smile.
Really?
As though I were nothing but air myself, he pulled me into a sweeping dance. I barely remembered any of the steps I'd learned in childhood, but
but he compensated for it with his feral grace, never faltering, always sensing any stumble before I made it as we danced across the spirit-riddled field. I was as unburdened as a piece of dandelion fluff, and he was the wind that stirred me about the world. He smiled at me, and I found myself smiling back. I didn't need to pretend, didn't need to be anything but what I was right then, being twirled about the meadow, the will-o'-the-wisps dancing around us like dozens of moons. Our dancing slowed, and we stood there, holding each other as we swayed to the songs of the spirits. He rested his chin upon my head and stroked my hair, his fingers grazing the bare skin of my neck.
"Vera,"
he whispered onto my head. He made my name sound beautiful.
"Vera,"
he whispered again, not in question, but simply as if he enjoyed saying it. As quickly as they'd appeared, the spirits vanished, taking their music with them. I blinked. The stars were fading, and the sky had turned grayish purple. Tamlin's face was inches from my own.
"It's almost dawn."
I nodded, mesmerized by the sight of him, the smell and feel of him holding me. I reached up to touch his mask. It was so cold, despite how flushed his skin was just beyond it. My hand shook, and my breathing became shallow as I grazed the skin of his jaw. It was smooth and hot. He wet his lips, his breathing as uneven as my own. His fingers contracted against the plane of my lower back, and I let him tug me closer to him, until our bodies were touching, and the warmth of him seeped into me. I had to tilt my head back to see his face. His mouth was caught somewhere between a smile and a wince. "What?" I asked, and put a hand on his chest, preparing to shove myself back. But his other hand slipped under my hair, resting at the base of my neck.
"I'm thinking I might kiss you,"
he said quietly, intently. "Then do it." I blushed at my own boldness. But Tamlin only gave that breathy laugh and leaned in. His lips brushed mine, testing, soft and warm. He pulled back a little. He was still staring at me, and I stared right back as he kissed me again, harder, but nothing like the way he'd kissed my neck. He withdrew more fully this time and watched me. "That's it?" I demanded, and he laughed and kissed me fiercely. My hands went around his neck, pulling him closer, crushing myself against him. His hands roved my back, playing in my hair, grasping my waist, as if he couldn't touch enough of me at once. He let out a low groan.
"Come," he said, kissing my brow. "We'll miss it if we don't go now."
"Better than will-o'-the-wisps?" I asked, but he kissed my cheeks, my neck, and finally my lips. I followed him into the trees, through the ever-lightening world. His hand was solid and unmovable around mine as we passed through the low-lying mists, and he helped me up a bare hill slick with dew. We sat atop its crest, and I hid my smile as Tamlin put an arm around my shoulder, tucking me in close. I rested my head against his chest while he toyed with the flowers in my garland. In silence, we stared out over the rolling green expanse. The sky shifted into periwinkle, and the clouds filled with pink light. Then, like a shimmering disk too rich and clear to be described, the sun slipped over the horizon and lined everything with gold. It was like seeing the world being born, and we were the sole witnesses. Tamlin's arm tightened around me, and he kissed the top of my head. I pulled back, looking up at him,
The gold in his eyes, bright with the rising sun, flickered.
What?
My father once told me that I should let my sisters imagine a better life, a better world. And I told him there was no such thing. I ran my thumb over his mouth, marveling, and shook my head. I never understood, because I couldn't believe that it was even possible.
I swallowed, lowering my hand.
Until now.
His throat bobbed. His kiss that time was deep and thorough, unhurried and intent.
I let the dawn creep inside me, let it grow with each movement of his lips and brush of his tongue against mine. Tears pricked beneath my closed eyes. It was the happiest moment of my life. Chapter 26. The next day, Lucian joined us for lunch, which was breakfast for all of us. Ever since I'd complained about the unnecessary size of the table, we'd taken to dining at a much reduced version. Lucian kept rubbing at his temples as he ate, unusually silent, and I hid my smile as I asked him, "And where were you last night?" Lucian's metal eye narrowed on me.
"I'll have you know that while you two were dancing with the spirits, I was stuck on border patrol."
Tamlin gave a pointed cough, and Lucian added,
"With some company."
He gave me a sly grin.
"Rumor has it you two didn't come back until after dawn."
I glanced at Tamlin, biting my lip. I'd practically floated into my bedroom that morning. But Tamlin's gaze now roved my face as if searching for any tinge of regret, of fear. Ridiculous. "You bit my neck on fire night," I said under my breath. "If I can face you after that, a few kisses are nothing." He braced his forearms on the table as he leaned closer to me.
"Nothing?"
His eyes flicked to my lips. Lucian shifted in his seat, muttering to the cauldron to spare him, but I ignored him. "Nothing," I repeated a bit distantly, watching Tamlin's mouth move, so keenly aware of every movement he made, resenting the table between us. I could almost feel the warmth of his breath.
"Are you sure?"
he murmured, intense and hungry enough that I was glad I was sitting. He could have had me right there on top of that table. I wanted his broad hands running over my bare skin, wanted his teeth scraping against my neck, wanted his mouth all over me.
"I'm trying to eat," Lucian said, and I blinked, the air whooshing out of me. "But now that I have your attention, Tamlin," he snapped,
though the High Lord was looking at me again, devouring me with his eyes. I could hardly sit still, could hardly stand the clothes scratching my too hot skin. With some effort, Tamlin glanced back at his emissary. Lucian shifted in his seat.
"Not to be the bearer of truly bad tidings, but my contact at the Winter Court managed to get a letter to me."
Lucian took a steadying breath, and I wondered if being emissary also meant being spymaster, and wondered why he was bothering to say this in my presence at all. The smile instantly faded from Tamlin's face.
"The Blight," Lucian said tightly, softly. "It took out 2 dozen of their younglings. 2 dozen. All gone." He swallowed. "It just burned through their magic, then broke apart their minds. No one in the Winter Court could do anything. No one could stop it once it turned its attention toward them. Their grief is unfathomable. My contact says the other courts are being hit hard, though the Night Court, of course, manages to remain unscathed. But the Blight seems to be sending its wickedness this way, farther south with every attack.
all the warmth, all the sparkling joy drained.